The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
At Verizon, anyone can trade in their old phone for a new one on us with Unlimited Ultimate, which means everyone in your family could get a new phone and stay on your family plan, keeping you close.
Hey, Mom, you seen my toothbrush?
Yeah, I'm almost done with it.
Oh, maybe too close. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
And welcome to Ben the Knee, a Song of Ice and Fire podcast. I am Sir Matt.
I'm Sir Jimmy of House Nuts. Welcome back to our Song of Ice and Fire book club. Today we are into Catelyn 5 of A Storm of Swords. Now you look confused, is that right?
Man, this is kind of a heartbreaker chapter, man. I'm not going to lie.
What? These books are like, you know, super nice and super cool and cozy, right?
Man. This chapter, it just feels so solemn.
You look mortified when I was reading that. I thought I had messed up somewhere.
No, you didn't mess up, man. I was just thinking about this chapter. Was that the message you felt? Is that the tone you felt of this chapter? Was like, oof, man.
I mean, every Catelyn chapter in this book feels so, you know, dreadful for the fact that we know it's coming. But I think here, at this point, it's been pretty obvious things are not going well for the Starks. This should be solidifying this, that there is many bad things to come with the Starks and that they are not in charge. And they are not on the winning side of this thing at all.
Yeah. Yeah, there's so many quotes from this chapter, and we'll get into it here in a minute. But man, there's so many quotes. Like I was even highlighting stuff and trying to take notes, and I just like, it's like every other paragraph, there's just like a line that's just like basically, you know, leaning towards the end, right? Like Catelyn being like, this might be the last time I see Riverrun, right? Or lines like, we're all just songs in the end if we're lucky, or, you know, it's like, oh my God, it's so, especially coming off of the Jaime thing. And then they're talking about it, man.
Yeah, this is like why I get offended when people like say stupid things like, all Game of Thrones is or was is random deaths. And it's like, if you have any literacy, you should be able to see that every single death is a consequence of a prior plot beat or action by the character. Like, and that the writing is on the wall. It is anything but random. Anything but random. In fact, George bails out characters in random death moments, like Tyrion falling off the boat in A Dance with Dragons, you know. I remember people being upset by that he didn't die. But it's like, well, why would George do that? It's a mishap, right? It's a little bit of tension to add. But these are the kind of chapters that I think kind of prove that if I wrote a book today and I made a fantasy book, it was kind of low fantasy, very grim, and I was just killing random characters with no concern about, you know, some kind of internal logic to the story. It might attract some eyes for the shock value, but it wouldn't have any staying power at all, right? And this shows you like the secret sauce of what makes those deaths work. It's moments like these and all the ones that have built up until this point. And then on a reread, of course, we know like everything just seems so obvious. But these kind of chapters are setting the tone for something, you know, diabolical to happen very, very soon.
Yeah. Yeah. To me, this chapter, and you know, we haven't even gotten to our hellos yet because I just want to dive so much into the chapter, but
well, that's okay.
Before just, we'll get to it here, but this chapter to me, well, just the last hype here before, is this might be one of some of George's best character writing. This chapter.
The guy, he's really good at that.
Yeah.
Thing.
There's a reason. Yeah, there's a reason. So, all right. Well, hey, but you know, we're going to get into the chapter. You know, I'm chomping at the bit here. Jimmy, how you doing, man? How is it going?
You know, just stressed. Yeah. And, you know, I always look forward to talking about some Asambe, some Byron George. It's definitely a good relief from everything. You know, nothing's worse. And I mean, well, there's plenty of things worse in life, but I'm exaggerating. So just go with me here. But there's nothing worse in life whenever then you're faced with a decision that you didn't know you're going to have to make like 10 minutes before it happens. And then you're like, I didn't know I had this option, but now I have this option. And while it's still probably a good thing, it's like, I really didn't want to make a change. You know, sometimes life has a habit of like kicking you out of your routine or your habits. Mm-hmm. And you're just like, like, do I have to do this right now? Like, I was really enjoying the way things were. And that's kind of where I'm at. You know, forced change is happening to me. And I guess I just have to kind of adapt and make it work. How are you doing? How's dad life?
Hey, you know, dad life's pretty good. We've been rocking our baby swim lessons. We've upgraded. All right. You know, we went from the, I guess, I don't know, 6 month class. Now we're in the 9 month class. She's crushing it. I'm trying to train
follower of the drown god.
I'm trying to train a D1 athlete over here. Okay. And we're starting literally as early as possible. Just gonna have to be a a college swimmer. Now there's all this college money, right? There's a lot of money in college sports now, and I'm hoping we can bank in on that in about, you know.
You're treating the child like an investment. I've always heard that that is actually the best way of going about it.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Got the 529 set up too, you know. Boom. We're locked in. We're locked in.
She's the owner of the LLC.
Pretty much. I will say, just, you know, not that this has anything to do with Game of Thrones, but for anybody listening, and we have a lot of, we have a huge female listener base because I know the analytics, right? It's
majority female, right?
I think so. Yeah, it's yeah, like 18 or like 25 to 35 or something, ladies. Like that. Pretty much. But let me tell you, baby swim lessons, it's pretty cool. I'm not gonna lie, like, as like seeing babies like swim like that, it's pretty crazy. She can like float now and kick.
Oh, it's
and
super hang important
on. Hang on to the wall. It's pretty sweet. Yep. We do this one out here called Swim Babies. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
That is cool, man. Yeah, it is super duper important.
And one other thing, you know, just going on in my life, I want to talk about here.
Oh boy, here we go.
Rocking the shirt. Talked a little bit about it last week, you know. Hail to the Kings. Okay. The Kings College Football, the Ohio State University. I was raging on Monday night. Slamming you were out of pocket. You know, yelling. Let's go.
Just being a guy.
Oh, yeah. That was great.
Matt has so desperately wanted this to turn into a hybrid.
I'd hang on Sloopy on repeat for like 4 hours. Just boom, baby. Just Ohio State fans. That's like one of the songs I play, you know. It's great.
I feel like you've desperately wanted this to be a hybrid between A Song of Ice and Fire and Sports podcast for a long time. And you finally have given up and made your own sports channel.
That's true. So, I did. I started one a couple weeks ago. It's called The Matt Brady Show. You can find it anywhere.
If you enjoy Matt's hot takes on sports, go check it out.
Yeah.
It's causing a ruckus among the
sports. Yeah, players. It was pretty great. It was pretty great. So today's chapter, Catelyn 5. Traveling in the rain to the Twins for the wedding of Lord Edmure Tully and Rosalind Frey, Catelyn recalls Rob sending Sir Rolf Spicer to deliver Martin Lannister to the Golden Tooth in an exchange of captives, with Robert Glover put on a ship at Duskendale as part of the agreement. Rob left his wife Jane, Westerling, at River Run, and only Sir Reynard Westerling travels with them. Rob has brought 3,500 men with him, those who have been with him since the battle in the Whispering Wood, and who will follow him to Moat Cailin after the wedding. While passing through the site of the battle, Catelyn thinks Theon Greyjoy, boasting he had almost crossed swords with Sir Jaime, and how much ill would have been undone if Theon had died in Lord Carstark's instead of Lord Carstark's sons. When they reach Oldstones, Catelyn recalls the ruins of a once great castle in the Kings of the Rivers and Hills during the Mud Dynasty. The Mud were first men, but during the time of King Christopher the Fourth, the kingdom of the First Men was falling during the coming of the Andals. Christopher the Fourth died when 7 Andal kings joined forces against him. Rob tells his mother that he has plans to legitimize his brother Jon Snow and name him heir should he and Jane not have a child. Catelyn is stunned by this proclamation and pleads with him not to make the mistake the Targaryens made with King Aegon the Fourth Targaryen when he legitimized all of his bastards on his deathbed. The Blackfyre pretenders plagued the Targaryens for 5 generations until Ser Barristan Selmy slew Maelys Blackfyre on the Stepstones. They both fear that Sansa will give the imp a son and thus control of Winterfell, and agree that must be prevented. She pleads that Rob consider naming his sister Arya as heir, but Rob insists that no one has seen Arya since his father Eddard's death and that his sister is likely also dead. Catelyn tells Rob that she cannot support his choice of Jon, but Rob reminds her that he does not have to ask for her support, stating, "I am the king. I'm the king." Lord Jason Malister soon joins Rob's force at Hag's Mire, bringing with him the captain of the Mirim. The captain tells them of King Balon Greyjoy's fall to his death when a wind blew him off one of the bridges between the towers of Pyke, and no sooner was he dead than Euron Crow's Eye returned to claim the Seastone chair. Lord Botley was drowned when he objected to Euron. Knowing Victorian and Asha will not stand for Euron's actions, Rob commands Mage Morma and Galbert Glover to sail through the marshes of the Neck on Malister longships to seek out Hallen Reed at Greywater Watch. After he is joined by Roose Bolton at the Twins and Edmure's wedding is done, Rob plans to march on Moat Cailin with 12,000 men. Howland's chronogmen will guide a small force under Rob's command across the swamps in order to reach Moat Cailin from the north. When Galbert warns what should happen if the chronogmen were to fail him, Rob replies, "They will not fail. My father knew the worth of Hallen Reed." Rob then announces that Catelyn will be taken to Seaguard under the protection of Jason after the wedding. King Rob then calls his bannermen to fix their seals as witnesses to the decree naming his heir. Talk about a massive chapter. There is so much in this chapter, Jimmy. I mean, the setup to the Red West,
crazy.
Euron Greyjoy's appearance and the Balon Greyjoy dying. All of the stuff with Jon Snow about to be named heir. What's going on with Arya? Howland Reed. There's even small little. There's so many small details in here too, which I want to talk about with like Jason Malister. And, you know, the Seastone chair, this is a massive, massive chapter. So, like, I guess, what are your big thoughts about, like, when you finish this?
Hallen Reed. That's always my thoughts. I'm always so curious about what's going on with him and the Krannic men. Also, just how much of a let's effing go moment Robb Stark being like, "Well, that's fine, mother, but I'm the king." It's one of those times where, I don't know, maybe it's because I was also a rebellious young boy at one point and finally was able to like do what I wanted. But so Catelyn's right about a lot of stuff, right? Catelyn is a very divisive figure within the fandom. A lot of people hate Catelyn because the way she treats Jon, and I've never been a big fan of how she treats Jon. But Catelyn also is right a lot of the times. Catelyn has pretty good instincts for most things, and she probably could have saved a lot of strife and heartbreak had Rob listened to her, maybe just a little bit more. This is one of those times, however, where I am totally against Catelyn. And I'm like, you get her, Rob. You tell her, put her in her place. You are the king. Tell her.
Yeah, well, any man who has to say he is king
is no king at all.
Right. Woo! Yeah. Yeah. That came to my mind. To me, again, this goes back to what I was talking about at the beginning of today's episode. I mean, the solemnness of this chapter really is what stood out to me. Catelyn's solemnness. And there was a line, I thought I had it saved, and but I have a bunch of other things highlighted, but there's a line, and I'm trying to find it here, where Catelyn is looking back at, when she's looking back at River Run as they're getting ready to leave, right? And she's thinking about, well, this might be the last time I ever see it. Like, there's so much foreshadowing to this might be the last time for a lot of things in this chapter.
Yeah, I think that usually when people say that in books, I don't believe it. I'm like, oh, okay, well, that means they're coming back. In this case, correct. Correct. Mm-hmm. There is a ton of, I mean, I guess, ominous energy in this chapter. But you know, another thing is, how good is George at relaying history lessons in a way that is like, you know, world building, history building, but it isn't just like straight out like, oh, and of course, 80 years ago, we saw Barristan. Like, none of that there. And it's planting seeds for the Blackfyre Rebellion here, right? We're getting reminded of Blackfyres. Why is that? Is it perhaps because George is going to introduce a character that might be a Blackfyre himself?
Well, also because George at this time is dumping out some of the Dunkin' Egg books, which also tie into, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, for sure.
There's that connection. Yeah, I will say this about George. And, you know, I haven't read nearly as much fantasy as you have. But I, from the other fantasy I have read, is George Martin, to me, is the best at, you know, like you said, he weaves in lore. He doesn't feel, I've never, there's no chapter that really just does a lore dump. Right. Where, yeah, sometimes like Wheel of Time certainly does that, at least from what bit of I read. And sometimes you have to get those. You have to get those lore dumps to make things make sense. But he weaves it in so effortlessly that you pick up tiny pieces throughout rather than hold on, we got to get through this like huge story here. And even when he does those moments, it's like a paragraph.
Yeah, they exist. They do exist in the series,
but it's never like a full chapter, which you get in other series.
Yeah, and also he does it pretty tactfully, whether it be through conversation of educating someone, which is a pretty common device to do such a thing. But also he does it in a manner where someone's in their inner thoughts and being like, oh, there's Harrenhal. I heard all these ghost stories about Harrenhal and this that happened. And like, so it makes sense that someone would be thinking about that, right? I think he does it in a pretty natural way, which is really, really great. And so one of the biggest pieces of writing advice people will give is show, don't tell. The ironic thing about that is actually sometimes it's better to tell. And I'm sure there's someone out there who will disagree with me on this, but like, it's like one of those 80-20 or 90-10 rules where it's like, yeah, 90% of the time you should probably be showing, but sometimes it is better to tell. And I've always thought George was really good at knowing when to tell. And this chapter being a really good example of that.
Yeah. Because even if you look at it, like when they cross over the grave, right, like Tristopher, here lies Tristopher, and it's like one paragraph, you know, the fourth of his name, king of the rivers and the hills, and you know what comes down to is then it immediately goes into, you know, she put a hand on her son's shoulder, he died in his 100th battle when the 7 Andal kings joined forces against him, his fifth Tristopher was not his equal, and soon his kingdom was lost. And then Rob immediately says his heirs failed him. And then it launches us right into the Jon Snow conversation. Right.
Yeah.
And so it's like, there's purpose to it. That's immediate. Whereas not as purpose into, you're going to need this way down the line. I mean, there is purpose for that, but it's in the inside of the context of the chapter. It's here's an immediate purpose, as opposed to sometimes you get lore dumps, which is like, oh, you're gonna need to remember this like down the line.
Yeah, where I think he's doing micro and
they
macro.
They point out like this is important later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that he does micro and macro things. I mean, even the mention of Barristan Selmy is really interesting, considering the fact that, you know, obviously he's under a disguise in Essos right now, and I don't think he's been exposed yet. So this is George also maybe signposting a little bit like, hey, remember Barristan Selmy? He was pretty important in history. He's still alive in the world. Interesting. Like, he gives you something to kind of consider if you want to. So I think he does a pretty good job on the micro and macro of breadcrumbing.
Yeah. I guess for me, it's never that, like, it's never that incredibly obvious, like, you're going to need to keep this in the back of your mind later, which, like, sometimes it's too obvious type of a I have some paragraphs here that kind of suck out to me. I want to pull this up. I fought beside the young wolf in every battle, Daisy Mormont said cheerfully. He has not lost one yet. No, but he has lost everything else, Catelyn thought. But I would not do it It would not do to say it out loud. The Northmen did not lack for courage, but they were far from home, with little enough to sustain them, but for their faith in their young king. That faith must be protected at all costs. I must be stronger, she told herself. I must be strong for Rob. If I despair, my grief will consume me. Everything would turn on this this marriage. If Edmure and Rosalind were happy in one another, then the late Lord Frey could be appeased and his power once more wedded to Rob. Even then, what chance will we have caught between Lannister and Greyjoy? It was a question Catelyn dared not dwell on, though Rob dwelt on little else. She saw how he studied his maps whenever they made camp, searching for some plan that might win back the North.
Still trying to think of strategy while being a mother.
Yeah.
Pretty tough, man.
Yeah, and nobody has lost everything else. You know, the interesting thing about that, too, is there's so many things that they don't know. Like, they don't know that, well, actually, Winterfell is no longer occupied by the Greyjoys. Mm-hmm. Like, they could go back to Winterfell. Don't know it. They don't have that. They don't have that news. They don't have that information.
Yeah, the drama... some people call it a miscommunication trope, but it's actually really not what this is. This is more of a restriction of information due to the way that they share information in the world. And it's a really good way of George, like, playing with that to create tension and drama and giving us a sense of anxiety. Like, no, you can just turn back now, you know, but they don't know that. And it's one of the reasons why I really love the whole Raven system of, like, you know, send a Raven. Send this and send that. And the information flow is not linear. And not everyone knows everything at the same time either. It's not consistent. And that comes up so many different times in the series where it matters. I think this is an example of world building that he's using to great effect to build more drama.
Yeah. There's another section I want to pull up here too, because it kind of got me thinking about something, and I don't think this is something that you and I have ever really discussed. I'm sure people on Reddit have. So just a few paragraphs after that, I think it's like two paragraphs after that, this is when she's thinking a little bit about, you know, she's thinking about Ned and thinking about Brandon, and she starts to think a little bit about Theon. It says, as the gods would have it, their route took them through the Whispering Woods, where Rob has won his first great victory. They followed the course of the twisting stream on the floor that pinched Narrow Valley, much as Jaime Lannister's men had done that fateful night. It was warmer then, Catelyn remembered. The trees were still green, and the stream did not overflow its banks. Fallen leaves choked the flow now and lay in sodden snarls among the rocks and roots. And the trees that had once hidden Rob's army had exchanged their green remnants for leaves of dull green spotted with brown, and a red that reminded her of rust and dry blood. Only the spruce and the soldier pines still showed green, thrusting up at the belly of the cloud like tall dark spears. More than the trees have died since then, she reflected. On the night of the Whispering Wood, Ned was still alive in his cell beneath Aegon's High Hill. Bran and Rickon were safe behind the walls of Winterfell, and Theon Greyjoy fought at Robb's side and boasted of how he almost crossed swords with a Kingslayer. Would that he had. If Theon had died in the place of Lord Karstark's son, how much ill would have been undone. First of all, just amazing writing by George. Because he's not only talking about, well, it's winter and the leaves are falling off. You hear about, like, the soldier pines, and it's reminding you of battle. And it's talking about how they've lost so much. And really all that's left are these soldiers, which is kind of also the case for the North, right?
Yeah.
Is that all of these Northmen left, and they've left their homes. And now they, you know, she's thinking Winterfell is lost. All of these things have lost. But also, it got me to the point of Theon. And I think one of the characters we never really discussed the possibility of crossing paths with Lady Stoneheart is Theon.
That's a good point, actually. I don't know if we have ever talked about this.
No, and it's one of those characters that I don't really see a lot of people theorizing about, because, you know, Theon in the show kind of goes his own route, but Theon in the books is quite different, right? He might die in Winterfell. There's a ton going on with Theon, who's, you know, Reek, and what's going to happen with him. And given the changes that might take place with either the Battle of the Bastards or, you know, the Sansa Theon piece we see in the show doesn't exist in the books because it's not Sansa there, right? It's such a different dynamic that we don't know what's going to happen there. And it is possible that those two characters could cross paths. And she does think of Theon a lot. If you actually go back, I did a Search of Ice and Fire, and she talks about Theon a lot in her chapters. You know, I've talked about how many times John is referenced in all these other characters. I did that big episode about that.
The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel, because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
At Verizon, anyone can trade in their old phone for a new one on us with Unlimited Ultimate, which means everyone in your family could get a new phone and stay on your family plan, keeping you close.
Hey, Mom, you seen my toothbrush?
Yeah, I'm almost done with it.
Oh, maybe too close. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Like a couple years ago and or last year. And same thing with Catelyn. She dwells on Theon Greyjoy a lot.
And that would be one of the more compelling scenes that you could do with Lady Stoneheart.
All right. Especially because she drowned, right? You know, like she's kind of drowned. Ooh. And he's like of the drowned god. And you could have like a real like power of the gods there too, like I'll show you the real ground like god. Like there's a lot you could scenes you could do there.
So it just makes you wonder, like, is that a redemption type thing where she forgives Theon? Because like it certainly doesn't seem like that's the way Lady Stoneheart's arc is going. I think we're supposed to almost be frightened by what she does.
Right. I think she would kill him. But remember, in the show, Theon does get some redemption from Jon. Jon kind of forgives him. It's actually one of the better
Theon's the one thing in the show that I think they did right all the way to the end, actually, to be honest.
For sure. 100%.
I think Theon's arc in the show is really good.
Yeah, it's by far one of the best things in the show. Actually, you know, I was thinking about this too, and the whole Jane Westerling arc, I actually almost think is better in the show too, because you don't really see, I'm thinking about it here, I'm like, you don't really see that much of it in the books. It kind of just happens. Where they do make it a little bit more of like a love story in the show. Like there's more, they build it out a little bit more.
Yeah. Then
as Jimmy would say, they flush it out.
They flush. I probably still am saying that all the time, aren't I?
I don't know. I haven't really heard you say it.
I don't know. I'm dumb. I got a lot of brain damage, folks.
I say
a lot of chair shots.
Sort of like all the time. So,
yeah. I just like these books. One thing that you brought up that I really wanted to touch on is the fact that you're talking about the setting, but also like, what does that remind you of? And the smell, all those things. And what it is, it's like George is avoiding doing static descriptions as much as possible. And instead is having his POV experience the setting. And that is a huge difference between someone who's a subpar writer to what would be considered a very competent writer. And George does it really well. And this is actually something he gets better at over time. And I think he does it really well in The Dance with Dragons with Dany. He actually describes the city in ways where it feels natural that Dany would think about it in that way. So this is a really good example of that, though, of good scene setting in writing. And scene setting is so important in fantasy because you're in a secondary world. We need to know what things smell, look like, feel like. Like that's all very important for immersion, which I would argue is one of the more important parts of epic fantasy. George is my favorite at it, actually. I think Tolkien does a phenomenal job, though Tolkien, I would say, also just sometimes just goes off about trees for 6 pages, not through the POV, you know, and you're like, oh, well, it's more myth, though. Feels more mythic and legend. But yeah, I just wanted to point that out because when you were describing it, something that I also caught on to, and I could like feel myself in those moments, like where Catelyn was.
Yeah, it's such a good, and there, like I said, we talked about this being somber. There's so much about this, you know. She thinks about Ned, and even later, there's a line where Jason Malister comes in, and she's talking about, and like I just noticed it talking. She says, "Let me see if I can pull it up here." I got it right about here. Something, but it talks about like the stranger. And I was just something that it's just it's like a stranger and then a warrior. And it's like, oh, you know, the stranger is death, the warrior. And like, and so he's talking about like a physical stranger, and it's so quick. But we know leading into where we're going that
oh my,
could be the case.
I like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me see. Is it right here?
Very cool.
Where do I have that? Oh, yeah. So it says, Lord Jason Malister caught up with them amidst the bogs of Hag's Mire. There was more than an hour of daylight remaining when he rode up with his column, but Rob called a halt once more. And Sir Reynold Westerling came to escort Catelyn to the king's tent. She found her son seated beside a brazier, a map across his lap. Greywyn slept at his feet. The great John was with him, along with Gobert Glover, Mage Morma, Edmure, and a man Catelyn did not know. A fleshy, balding man with a cringing look to him. No lordling, this one. She knew the moment she laid eyes on the stranger, not even a warrior. It's Jason Malister who rises to offer Catelyn his seat. And so it's just, I don't know, just kind of thinking about like where they're headed is, you know, here she's brought into this tent expecting one thing, and what does she find? A stranger, right? And we're heading into River Run heading into the Twins for this feast. And what is she going to meet? Well, the stranger, because she's going to die.
That's really good. I really like that.
So, yeah.
That's some good symbolism I had not seen before, like seeing you point out.
Yeah. So, I mean, it could be something George was thinking. I don't know. You know, it could be or not, but just.
Oh, I think he 100% was. I think he was absolutely cooking.
Yeah, something that caught my mind. So as we continue on here a little bit, and I'll pull up some of the quotes. You know, they talk about Euron Greyjoy and Balon here. Mm-hmm. I think it's, you know, a giant wind came up and blew him off. And then they talk about, well, then Euron Greyjoy showed up. And then Euron killed somebody who disagreed with him. So they never dive into like, well, it's obvious Euron killed him, but I mean, it's pretty obvious, right?
Oh, yeah. You're supposed to be raising your eyes at this point for sure. And this is something that has huge ramifications in future books. So it's kind of neat that it's mentioned right here.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, they talk about he's gone to a shine back. They don't go a ton into it much more than that, but that's kind of it. So I'll pull up some of the readers' discussions here on the reread subreddit. There's so many good lines. If you would keep all your treasures in one purse, you only make it easier for those who would rob you. This is what she says to Rob as he led his entire army into Lord Walder Frey's lair.
My God.
I know. This chapter, man, is brutal. It is so brutal. Yeah, the plan to retake Moat Cailin is also pretty cool. Like, he's like, well, nobody's ever taken it. He's like, well, he's like, from the south. He's like, we could take it. We could take it from the north. And, you know, unfortunately, we never get to see that.
Yeah.
Yeah. In the show they do take Moat Cailin, and that's where Theon goes in as Reek and says, oh, I'm Theon Greyjoy. And then they end up going in and killing them all.
This is also the Crannogmen, right? He's supposed to send them to help with this effort. And we kind of like lose sight of Hallen Reed's people after this event.
But yeah, this is one of those totally unexplained things.
It's one of those hints, though, like that happens in Feast and Dance, where like you kind of hear about the Crannogmen, like they almost start becoming like a myth. But it seems like they're kind of watching and protecting those who they have interest in. And it's really subtle. But I think that we are building to a big Howland Reed thing. Now, here's an interesting piece about Howland Reed I wanted to bring up. I don't know if you knew this, but in an early draft of A Storm of Swords, Howland was rescued by Brandon Stark, the Wild Wolf, and not Lyanna, the She-Wolf.
So I wonder what plans he had then.
He obviously changed it, right? So it's like what does that mean for Howland Reed's character if his rescuer could be changed out? If the Knight of the Laughing Tree might have actually been Howland all along.
Yeah.
Well, kind of interesting to think about.
Yeah. And the other thing too, about Howland Reed and the fact that these people are going to go search for him. There's a lot of people in Winds of Winter that are searching for other people. Davos is going searching for Rickon. They're out there searching for Howland Reed. Bran is.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone's still out there searching for Benjen at some point. Like, there's so many characters that people are searching for that are going to have to be introduced at some point.
Yeah, and George did say that Howland Reed would never be a POV because he knows too much.
Bran is still searching for Sansa and Arya.
Yeah, I feel like George saying that, hey, Howland Reed won't be a POV because he knows too much is saying he will be in the story, though. Like, I feel like that's exactly what that means. But maybe I'm just being hopeful. Who knows?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Some other good points here. John is more of a Stark than some lordlings from the Vale who have never so much set eyes on Winterfell. Because Rob knows that John is the heir of Winterfell. And I think that, is a true indication that it's going to be just like when John, I think, is going to get resurrected, as we know, and he is going to be free of his Night's Watch vows.
Yeah.
I do like the argument that Rob makes up, though. He's like, well, if I give him 100 men, they'll let him free. And that's where that's where he uses the Barristan argument to say, well, okay, but they stripped Barristan Selmy of his white cloak, which had never been done before. So why can't I do this?
Yeah,
I know. There's a lot of interesting stuff here. So I'm gonna keep reading some other thoughts on this as well. He talks about Aegon the Fourth, who legitimized all of his bastards, and how much pain, grief, war, and murder grew from that. I know you trust John, but can you trust his sons or their sons? You go back to Game of Thrones. Catelyn was very happy when they decided to send John to the Watch because she was worried that his children might claim Winterfell against her grandchildren. Now her fear is becoming very realistic.
Yeah, John or Tyrion's kid? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, that's what Rob says. That is the argument he makes. He's like, well, if I give it to Arya, then it's going to be Lannister sitting the throne, and John is more of a Stark than them.
Yeah, and Rob's right. Like I said, Rob's wrong on tons of things because he's a boy. But here, he's definitely right. Also, like, I don't know why Catelyn has painted John as this, like, power-hungry, like, piece of shit. Like,
John never gives
that off.
No, he's never shown any indication to be a terrible person.
No.
Like nobody else speaks of him that way.
Nobody.
Yeah.
Literally no one.
The only person, I mean, outside of Alistair Thorne. Outside of Alistair Thorne, nobody hates John as much as Kat.
Yeah. I mean, but this is cool because what you're seeing is a bias, right? Through a POV's eyes. Like, you're seeing her bias that she can, and we all have these things, right? That we can't get we don't make sense as human beings. We're irrational a lot of the time. And Catelyn's being irrational here. And it's because it's caused her deep hurt and trauma. With her relationship with Ned and the betrayal that she perceives John to be, even though we know he's not.
Right. Which is why the theory, and a lot of people say that she may give up her life. She may be the one to give up her life for the resurrection of John.
That'd be sick.
Which would make her arc feel pretty cool.
Oh, it'd feel really good. It would also feel really good if she killed some Freys first, but.
Yeah, but it's just like, system. How do you
get her up there?
Logistically, what's gonna cause her to hear about that? The only
you got to get her to the wall. You have to get through Red Wedding 2.0. Like, it's tough.
The only way I see that happening is this is the only scenario I see this happening. But the problem is the timeline for this because of the way pieces move and travel. The only way I see this happening is if. Like, Davos it would have to be kind of similar to what we have in the show where Davos sees what Melisandre did by killing Shireen. And then, and then he kicks her out, and then she runs into Lady Stoneheart because, you know, she's seeking out other people like R'hllor. You know what I mean? Because in the show, she ends up going down to meet meet Daenerys and all of these things. So she would have to like meet Lady Stoneheart, be like, oh, I can give you final purpose or something. And then that's how she gets. And then Lady Stoneheart agrees to do it through Melisandre. Other than that, I don't know how you're going to logistically do it, because it's like, how long is Winds of Winter going to be? I mean, timeline wise, like, are they just going to let John's body sit there for months? I mean, it's frozen. Isn't going to decay. You know, I mean, that's the other problem is John is, I don't know that John can be resurrected at the end of Winds of Winter.
I'd be open to the idea that he could be kept on the sidelines off Winds and he comes back for A Dream of Spring because it shows that like life's coming back. And like, I think thematically you could make that work. And it's probably possible, right? Because if you sideline John, you get to spend a whole lot of time wrapping up these other things, right? Like, it's almost like putting him on pause and then wrapping up all this other stuff you got to get done at the wall eventually.
But Winds of Winter would have Winds of Winter would have to be like 3 days.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe, you know what I mean?
Maybe. But here's the other thing. And I actually think this is very likely. We might see an early resurrection of John. But I think John's going to have to remember what it's like to be human again, because he's going to go into ghost. He's going to go into ghost. So he's going to live on. And it's not going to be a pretty resurrection like it was in the show. Like, it's going to be, I guess, it's going to be gruesome.
Yeah, I guess there is also the timeline thing where some, you know, and this is where why I'm excited for us to do Boiled Leather, the combined read of
the
two books, is that what's happening at the wall could be 3 or 4 days and some of the other events could be much longer.
Yeah, for sure.
Right, like the timeline that's going on with Tyrion doesn't necessarily have to meet up with the timeline that's going on with Jon.
Correct. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So it could, and then Jon could be resurrected, and then, and like in theory, like chapter like, I don't know, 20 of the book, and then weeks could go by, and then people end up meeting with him later, and so you could do it that way, but that's my biggest argument against the Lady Stoneheart thing, unless the timeline of Lady Stoneheart, you know, is like some of that stuff's happening inside of where Winds of Winter, you know, like if you're looking at a just straight timeline, you know, like if some of the stuff that's happening in Dance of Dragons is actually happening alongside some of the things that are happening with Winds of Winter, then you could get to that route.
Yeah, I think that the whole Red Wedding 2.0, where like they basically Red Wedding the phrase back, I mean, that's being set up pretty well when you read Feast and Dance. Mm-hmm. Like, to me, I'd put money on it. Like, if I had to put bet on what Stoneheart does and wins, I think Red Wedding phrase getting destroyed happens. I actually think that's way more likely possibly than Arya coming back and like doing this big massacre. Like, I actually think it's more likely that'll be Stoneheart's piece. But maybe not. I don't know that for sure, but I don't think logistically it makes a ton of, maybe I shouldn't say it doesn't make a ton of sense. I don't see how it's feasible to put her at the wall. And also, like, resolve all these things, because remember, she's not a POV anymore, so we would have to be able to see the rationalization of why Catelyn has changed her tune to resurrect Jon. You know what I mean?
Through somebody else's eyes.
Yeah, that's going to be tough.
It could be Melisandre.
It could.
As we know,
it could. It could also be Brienne.
Yeah.
Could be Brienne. Maybe she goes. Yeah. I mean, it's hard to say. I mean, Lady Stoneheart is up in the air. Totally. Like, we have nothing for her, like no sense of direction, I don't think, outside of the fact that she wants vengeance. You know, people have talked about her meeting up with Arya and then Arya having to like kill her mom, but like, I've never really understood why she would have to kill her mom. I've seen that a lot. I've never really bought into it. I do like the idea of Catelyn giving one of her kids life again, but that would require one of her kids to be in danger to where she would die, or one of them would die, right? So does she run into Rick? And I'm not sure if that's the end we see to her. I feel like I remember seeing something where people were speculating that George had kind of hinted that she would have a role to play in the final battle with the White Walkers. So maybe that could be something.
She could do something similar to what we saw Melisandre do, in that. Oh, final, yeah. In that big battle where Melisandre takes the Dothraki and lights their swords on fire so they can all go die in like 2 seconds.
And then come back the next episode. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yikes.
But I could see something similar to that. Another point I want to talk about, and this kind of goes in a little bit, and this, again, think about the lore dumping in this is like unreal. Because
again,
there's so much lore. And one of the things I totally forgot about is this is where you get so much of the backstory of Lyanna Hightower.
Yeah.
It was Ser Jorah Mormont's wife, right? And Catelyn even has like a really good line too. You know, she's reflected about like Winterfell and Ned and Bran and Rickon and Sansa and Arya and how they're all gone. And that it's really only Rob that remains. And she said, had there been too much of Lyanna Hightower in her after all, and too little of the Starks, would that I had known how to wield an axe. Perhaps I might have been able to protect them better. Hmm. Yeah, at the end, realizing maybe she would have been better off as a warrior.
Maybe, but I don't know if that's true. Right. I think she might just be trying to find anything to latch on to.
Rationalize.
Yeah.
Yeah. When you read, Rob is the only thing really that she has left. Even and the sad part about this whole I think the saddest part about Catelyn's story, especially at this moment, is that all of those things actually aren't gone.
Yeah.
And she thinks they are. Like Winterfell, right now they're talking about right now it's like, well, we can't go back to Winterfell because it's taken. Well, actually it's not anymore. Like you could go take back Winterfell. Bran and Rickon, Sansa and Arya are actually all alive. And you could go, you know, especially Sansa, you know, is alive. Arya's out there. Bran and Rickon's deaths were faked. Right. There's some people who believe Ned might still be out there. Might have warged into a raven or something. I don't think so. But, you know,
yeah, it might be
certainly out there. Although we'll say, though, the Ned Stark's bones traveling north business is an interesting little theory to follow along. Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
But yeah. And it's just now after all of this, her destruction over the course of the last 2.5 books, it's just terrible.
Yeah. She's just been broken down. And it is interesting that her perception of the situation is what's kind of forming her mindset, making her question all these things, when in reality, it's something totally different. It kind of shows the power of perception.
Yeah. There's also Jane Poole or Jane Westerling, excuse me, how she like really wants to come with Rob, but they decide not to do so. And he talks about leaving her behind and protecting her. And then, of course, this is one of the most important things to her theory, which is she might have been pregnant with Rob's, might have actually been pregnant, because he specifically talks about like, you know, we tried, I want to give her an heir. And then, you know, she's forced to drink that tea. And some people think she might be. And that's a whole, you know, other theory that exists that she could be pregnant. And I think this is one of those moments that shows where the time jump was still in George's mind.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt.
That George was still totally planning for this time jump that obviously didn't happen. And, you know, that's what happened. So, yeah. Okay. I mean, there's a ton of other things in this chapter you could ultra pinpoint on, Jimmy, but any kind of final thoughts here?
The end is near. the end is near, my friend.
It's so solemn.
And it's heartbreaking every time for me.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we're heading into next time will be Samwell 3. I think we have a Patreon episode 2 we're gonna dive into about the Weirwood Network. Because remember I found that big thread, and man, I found actually there's some cool, I think, actual geographical, like legitimate real world stuff that George might have based the Weirwoods on.
Ooh,
there's like this. There's this tree, and I'll kind of hype it up a little bit here. There's this tree in Idaho that is the largest tree in the world, like root wise. Like it just like grows. Let me see if I can pull it up here. The tree is called Pando. And I think I've talked about this before. Anyway, it's the world's largest tree, and it's located out in Utah, excuse me. And it has 47,000 stems, and all appear to be individual trees, but it's not, because they're all connected to this one, like, you know, sort of mother tree. And it takes place, it's a pretty large, it's almost like it's an entire forest, but it's all based on this one tree.
How interesting. I mean, yeah. It could be. I mean, he uses so much
of
real life.
Yeah. So some people have speculated, like, oh, that's where he's drawn some inspiration for, with like the Weirwood network and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So pretty cool. So anyway, we're going to talk about that and, like, the Weirwood dreams, especially now that we have all this new information of Daemon Targaryen with House of the Dragon and all of that. So pretty cool stuff. We'll be doing that next time. So with that, I want to thank you for playing the Game of Thrones. In our next episode, we will be discussing A Storm of Swords, Chapter 46, Samwell 3.
And if you like our podcast, don't forget to subscribe, like us, write a review, leave a comment, or send us a raven at btkcast@gmail.com or bendtheknee.com.
We'll see you next time. And remember that winter is coming.
The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel, because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets, which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
At Verizon, anyone can trade in their old phone for a new one on us with Unlimited Ultimate, which means everyone in your family could get a new phone and stay on your family plan, keeping you close.
Hey, Mom, you seen my toothbrush?
Yeah, I'm almost done with it.
Oh, maybe too close. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.